Hello and welcome to Risk and Business, the Advent IM podcast. I'm here again, Ellie Hurst. I'm Head of Communications for Advent IM, and I'm really happy to be talking to Mike, our MD, this morning. Hello, Mike.
Hello and good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent.
Getting used to this brave new world of lockdown.
That's right, yeah. So another podcast by Skype, which is an interesting experience for me and a whole new set of challenges, but all good fun. So this morning, Mike, thought we'd have a little bit of a chat about ransomware. And although, you know, lots of people talk about ransomware, I think it'd be interesting for us to just have a little bit of a chat about its evolution, but with a specific reference to critical national infrastructure and some operational technology challenges, stuff like that.
Definitely.
So I know it's something that we've talked about a few times in the past, and we've definitely presented on it at a few different events, including some of the really quite excellent Gallagher events. But, you know, it still seems to be something that people aren't quite getting their heads around. Not all businesses are getting their arms around it, and there seems to be a kind of not a consistent approach then, shall we say. So I thought we'd just have a little bit of a chat about that.
That sounds great. Yeah, no problem at all.
So what do you see as being some of the major changes that have happened over the last sort of 2 or 3 years of ransomware, Mike?
Well, I think in order to answer that, you have to first look at some of the things that haven't changed in the last 25 years. So I can, you know, I can remember in the very early days of my security career dealing with the first connected viruses and worms that came out. Viruses like the I Love You virus. And even the virus warning virus, which came alleging to be a warning about a virus in the wild, except when you clicked on it, it actually activated the virus.
Yes.
And that's a key thing, because in 25 years, actually the delivery method, primarily through the internet and largely still through emails, still relies on a connection with a user that generates curiosity that then results in somebody interacting with it.
So it's still a people issue then?
So it's still very much a people issue. Mm-hmm. And I think actually there's a huge parallel to be drawn along with what's happening around the world this year. The reason so many organizations have gone into lockdown, because we have a pandemic, effectively a real life global virus, mm-hmm. Which is affecting so many people. And the only way to control it is to prevent people from interacting with it. Mm. Now, of course, when it comes to computer networks, it's just not realistic to expect us to go back to a world where we're not connected to each other and we're therefore not interacting with these things. Mm. However, all the research tells us that the biggest and most successful way of introducing malware, including ransomware, into a network continues to be by sending a phishing email to our staff.
Yeah.
And around the world, we're spending billions of pounds on new technology and continuing to develop, you know, increasingly sophisticated tools, detection, anti-malware. Now we're talking about, you know, machine learning and artificial intelligence, anti-malware, but it's still getting through. Mm-hmm. Because our biggest strength and our biggest weakness is our human element and our curiosity.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I've noticed about ransomware, I mean, people kind of have a bit of a disconnect between their personal lives and their work lives. I think that's starting to disappear, but I think with so many people now working from home, that they're possibly being forced to apply some more stringent security to their behavior, and so this may also contribute to it, but a shift away from the kind of personal ransomware attacks, so that kind of like singular exploitation kind of thing of an individual that's done with a kind of scattergun approach to a much more structured lucrative set of targets, i.e. businesses and some, you know, cities and municipalities.
That's right, because, you know, in the early days, it was easy to use some sort of internet bot and connected technology in order to send out several million phishing emails. And in that way, you only needed to harvest 0.01% in order to make it lucrative. But of course, that's still a little bit too much like hard work for the bad guys, you know. So how do you make more money with less effort? You target people with more money, and the people who have the most money, of course, are the corporations, the city governments, and the national governments. So of course, the scale of attack has refocused on those entities that have got the money, but also which historically have shown themselves as being particularly poor at managing and updating their technology. You know, now only have to go back a couple of years here in the UK to see the amount of concern there was across our public sector when they end-of-lifed XP. Because,
yes,
well, shock horror, it's an operating system that's coming to the end of its life, and now we're going to have to replace it.
Yes.
As though that wasn't factored in as part of the implementation of that technology in the first... Oh, yeah, of course. No, of course it wasn't. Because it's a capital expenditure, and we don't think about software life cycle and hardware life cycle.
Yeah.
We don't think about ongoing maintenance and patching, because they're operational requirements, not part of the procurement requirements.
Yes. Yeah, there's a real disconnect, isn't there? And of course, look what happened after that. So... it almost feels like the beginning of a major shift there, this sort of much more finely tuned software, more finely tuned ransomware. So thank you very much to everyone who paid up your ransoms there, because you helped to fund that development.
It's the
attack the rest of us.
How can we make more money for software development? I don't know. We'll go and exploit and blackmail a few people.
That's right.
And then when they pay up, we'll use that to fund our software development process.
That's right. Sort of crowdfunding. And, and it worked. It's worked brilliantly. I mean, you sent me something this morning, Mike, to look at, which was a story about, was it a nuclear reactor?
In India, one of their newest nuclear reactors in India, which then got attacked by malware. And it just goes to show, you know, it's like even where something is cutting edge, you know, we've got these... I think when we talk about hackers, people still have this toxic image of it being, you know, a teenager in a hoodie, in a darkened room. And wherever they go, they're followed by matrix graphics. But actually, you know, cybercrime is big business. It's lucrative business. It's netting cyber criminals millions and millions of pounds every year. So this nuclear reactor in India was attacked by the Lazarus cyber criminal group, a group who have also been associated with attacks on Sony, banking systems. It's estimated that they stole about £700 million from the Bangladesh bank. £700 million, that's easy money, and much harder to prosecute when it's done by a computer from across the other side of the world than when you burst into a bank in a ski mask holding a sawn-off shotgun.
Yes, that's very out of fashion now.
And of course, much
apart from the masks,
risk.
Of course. We're big on masks now, just
big on masks. Masks on full circle.
So they're back, but you know, less of the sort of sawn-off shotguns. So okay, so nuclear power plant then, What other kind of bits of critical national infrastructure has seen this kind of attack?
Well, I mean, around the world, we've seen attacks in Ukraine on their power systems, water systems being attacked. The thing that we have to appreciate, I think, is that behind most of our critical infrastructure, even here in the UK, is an aging infrastructure. Our SCADA systems, programmable logic controllers, and we're seeing malware. You know, it's only, what is it, 2 years ago, we saw people showcasing malware that had been specifically written to attack these aging systems and to compromise these systems. So you take aging infrastructure with obsolete operating systems and massively vulnerable protocols, and connect that to your critical infrastructure, which you then connect to the internet.
Because you've got to be able to manage it, yeah?
Yeah. So it doesn't take the brains of a rocket scientist to connect that with easy target.
Yeah.
And a lucrative target.
Yeah.
Because not only not only can they attack these systems for financial gain, you know, if you've got hold of somebody's nuclear reactor or their water system or their power system, and you're threatening to turn off the grid, the chances of them paying up are pretty high. Add to that research that we've seen that says that organizations would rather ring fence money to pay ransomware than protect their system from an attack in the first place.
Yeah.
So we've got organizations who we know are prepared to pay, combined with infrastructure that is easy to compromise, combined with organizations who have got the capability to pay.
Yeah.
Bingo, perfect storm.
It is a perfect storm. I read somewhere, I think it was last year, an article that said that there were some banks that were actually ring fencing large amounts of Bitcoin in order to be able to pay cyber ransoms. And that was a real shake my head moment, because I thought, wow, is that where we are now, really?
Yeah, we're effectively saying that we accept that crime's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, it's a bit like you or I saying, we just accept now that crime happens, so we'll stick an extra couple of quid in the sock drawer, just in case.
Yeah.
Rather than replace the broken front door.
Yeah. We'll work out why the front door failed in the first place and then make some appropriate improvements.
But, you know, this is, we're talking, you know, going back 3 or 4 years now. You know, over in the States, they admitted that there had been a sustained and very capable, very sustained and very joined up attack on a number of their energy companies. We've seen here in the UK several years ago now. Well, it was under David Cameron as the Prime Minister, so that gives you an idea of how long ago it is. The government identified cyber attack on our national infrastructure as being a tier one threat, one of only 16 tier one threats to the UK.
Yeah.
That's an act of international terrorism, hostile computer attacks on our cyberspace, major incident, national hazard, such as, funnily enough, a pandemic.
Yes.
So cyber attack on our national infrastructure is up there alongside a global pandemic as a tier one threat.
Yes.
And we know that as we come into the final year of the National Cybersecurity Strategy, that we still haven't got our hands around how to deal with that tier one threat.
No, we haven't. And I think the fact that I think it was 2017, the National Cybersecurity Centre said that they'd identified a serious and sustained a series of attacks on the supply to critical national infrastructure. They didn't specify where, obviously, because they couldn't do that. But which shows us again, so it's not just a case of critical national infrastructure that is potentially under threat, but the threat could be coming from its own supply chain or ecosystem, of which, you know, a huge amount of UK businesses will be a part of. But also some of that. So if you start at the top, then some of the infrastructure itself is not domestically owned. It's owned and operated by, you know, non-UK entities, and some of that is private as well. And then you add on top of that the convolution and complexity of the supply chain and ecosystem for those bits of infrastructure, and what you've got is a kind of a bit of an unwieldy monster in terms of trying to provide assurance, security assurance for that. What do you think about that?
Well, again, this is not new news, is it? Because we've been warned for probably coming on for a decade now that supply chain assurance needs to be considered more. And it's not a supply chain, is it? Let's face it, it's a whole ecosystem.
It is an ecosystem.
Interconnected organizations.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the forerunner to the national cybersecurity strategy, the government said that government had a defense and security structure that was woefully unsuitable for the world we currently live in. Mm. Now, you know, that's 7-8 years old as a quote.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still, how many organizations are actually auditing their supply ecosystem to understand how their security posture looks?
And I think for most, it's such a big thing that they kind of almost don't want to, but almost don't want to look at it. It's almost like too big. It's like, forget an elephant in the room. It's much bigger than an elephant.
Yeah. And you know, how many links do they go across their supply ecosystem if they are doing it?
Yeah.
And as we, you know, we've seen it in all sorts. It's not just in the cyber world, but you only have to look at the food chain. The reason we ended up with horse meat in ready meals in the UK was because we lost contact with the supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know what's going into your supply chain, then don't be surprised when you don't know what's going into your ready meal.
Mm-hmm.
Or in this case, into your national infrastructure.
Into your infrastructure, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm. And, you know, we're spending 8 to 10% of our defense budget on cybersecurity. And the only thing that we've achieved in the National Cybersecurity Strategy is the implementation of a national cybersecurity center. Now,
yeah. You know,
without wanting to be critical of the national cybersecurity center, because they have achieved a whole load of fantastic.
Oh my God, they have, yes.
Operational elements.
Yes.
You know, they're dealing with stuff on an ongoing basis, on an operational level and a tactical level, extremely well.
Yes.
But other than the writing of a strategy 8 years ago, who is doing the strategic thinking on an ongoing basis?
Mm-hmm.
And why do we wait until the end of the National Cybersecurity Strategy to refresh it?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows if you've got a business strategy,
yes,
you don't write a 3 to 5 year business strategy and then wait till the end of those 5 years and go, oh, business strategy didn't work, we're broke.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a breathing, living entity.
Yeah, you update it as you're going along and you react to changes in the world and, or in the case of business, in changes to finance and business operations and all sorts of things as you go along. So we are over a decade down the line from government identifying cyber as a tier one threat. We've got 10 years of spending 8% of our defense budget on cybersecurity. We've got year after year after year, government saying cybersecurity is a major problem and we're not up to it. And we don't appear to have anybody in government who knows how to fix this problem. Whilst at the same time, as you've identified, our national infrastructure is largely not in UK ownership, outsourced to the private sector, to non-UK organisations, we've got the potential that our entire power infrastructure is owned by not only non-UK organisations, but hostile non-UK organisations. Mm-hmm. Combined with cyber being a tier one threat.
Yeah. Yeah, something's dreadfully disconnected somewhere, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's like a Far Side comic.
Yes. Well, you know, he may have drawn it, we just haven't seen it yet, so that's something to look at. That's something to look for, listeners, once you've listened to this podcast.
So, yeah, I don't even ask for any credit for that one.
No.
But, you know,
no, fair play.
You know, where are we going to go from here? Because the situation not only is not going away, not only is it not getting any better, but actually it's getting exponentially worse on a week-by-week basis as we throw more and more peripheral operational technology, Internet of Things, into our infrastructure that just frankly isn't fit for purpose. And that's connected into our peripheral networks, like, for example, our air conditioning or our fire and life safety system, which in turn, for ease of management, is connected into our network, which in turn, for ease of management, is connected into our infrastructure, which in turn, as a supplier, is connected into our national infrastructure. Mm. But, you know, the attacks that we're seeing, they're not, by and large these days, they're not attacking the corporate infrastructure head on.
No, because why would you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why would you? Yeah.
You know, and as some of our listeners will know, one of the reasons that I've worked alongside people like Tony Porter and some of the manufacturers in the surveillance camera industry over the last few years to develop standards for that is because we've seen compromises there. We've seen whole cities of surveillance cameras being taken offline by ransomware. We've seen children being spoken to in their bedroom by paedophiles because of poor security.
Yeah.
So we have to also appreciate that, you know, cybersecurity is not this academic thing. It's not just something that researchers are talking about. It's happening in the real world. Mm-hmm. It's not just something that, you know, big corporations get hit by it and it hits the news and then it goes away and it's cost a little bit of money. Actually, it threatens our livelihoods, our safety, our finances, our health services. You know, when you have so much of the National Health Service taken offline by a ransomware attack, that's not just an attack on computers, it's an attack on people's health. Mm-hmm. It's an attack on their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so we all of us need to switch on to this idea that cybersecurity isn't academic, it's not some sort of ethereal thing. Yeah. It's actually something that has the real potential to affect every one of us.
Yeah, it's not discrete. It's not a discrete thing. It's part of us. It's part of our lives. It's part of all of our lives. And I think the more that we continue to blend work and home as well, the more important it becomes. And I think that's one of the things that Craig and I talked about in the last podcast was this, as everybody has moved to working from home and, you know, as the pandemic continues, and working practices continue to try and keep up with that. You know, many businesses and organisations are going to choose to keep people working remotely. And, you know, with that comes a huge amount of responsibility because there's been a huge uptick in the amount of attempts to try and, you know, extort or attack remote workers. As people start to come back to work who've maybe been on furlough, there's going to be a huge amount of risk that's also going to be sat in their inboxes as well, that may not have been filtered out, that could still be sat there waiting, because the amount of phishing and, you know, malicious traffic that's gone out over the last couple of months is huge. It hasn't gone away. None of it's gone away. Everything has changed. And we're now in this situation where we're trying to juggle all of this stuff all at once. And I see some quite big challenges, actually. And some of it is going to be coming from ransomware, again, as you quite rightly say, because this main delivery system is through phishing emails. But there's masses of it out there, absolutely masses.
Oh, and criminals are hugely adept at manipulating and exploiting what's happening in the world to their mm-hmm. own end. So, mm-hmm. of course, it's no surprise that there's a huge amount of coronavirus-related malware mm-hmm. And ransomware floating around. Mm-hmm. But they're also, you know, as we've seen, incredibly lazy at times. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen ransomware hitting people's computers that isn't even ransomware. It's just a splash screen that pretends to be ransomware. And people are still paying up.
Paying up, yeah. Still paying. Yes. Well, we couldn't cure it all in 20 minutes, Mike, sadly. We gave it a good go. We gave it a good go, but it wasn't going to, it wasn't to be. But it's been really good talking to you anyway.
Well, I would like to see, going forward, if I could wave a magic wand, what I would like to see is just a small fraction of that 10% of our defence budget being spent on proper, dedicated, effective, and role-specific user education. Mm-hmm. Just a small fraction of that would have a massive, massive difference in the spread of these sort of diseases, as it has done in the current pandemic.
Yeah, yes. Agreed. Well, until the government gives you a magic wand, Mike, we're just going to have to hope, I'm afraid.
Well, I got these three magic beans.
Yes, I've got magic beans too. Yeah. Some guy sent me an email, right?
Actually, I might spend some of the money that I'm due to get from this Nigerian prince on that sort of solution, actually.
Yeah, beans for everyone.
Beans for everyone, yeah. Yeah,
beans all around. Yeah. All right then, Mike, it's been fun.
Hopefully somewhere in amongst all of this, our listeners will have found something of interest. Maybe a few things to give them a genuine smile in the strange world that we're living in at the moment. And perhaps even a little bit of a face palm and a head shake as people recognise some of the challenges that we've raised.
Yes. So keep listening, folks. Anyway, there'll be more to come. Big thanks to Mike. Greatly appreciated. And we'll catch you again next time.
Cheers. Bye, Mike. Goodbye.